Stapleton. Jennifer, thank you for being here.
Yes, good morning. Thank you for having me again.
Our city administrator up until about a week ago for the previous 8 years, right?
You were correct.
In that position.
Correct.
Yeah. So we want to talk with you about some of the things that happened during your 8 years here, because a lot did happen.
Let's get to our interview. I want to say first, because I've been an administrator of organizations, but nothing as big as the city of Sandpoint. I think we can all say, or thank you for your service. It's a big job. You did it with remarkable skill and experience behind you. So thank you, Jennifer Stapleton, for your 8 years of service to our community.
Thank you, Susie. I really appreciate that. It's been an honor to serve the city, work with the citizens, the electeds, and business owners downtown. It's been a pleasure for the last 8 years.
So let's back up to the start. We want to talk about some history here. And you were hired just a little over 8 years ago now, I believe.
Yes. So I started January 4th of 2016. And my last day was January 3rd of 2024. Okay. So 8 years exactly to the day.
Yeah. That's interesting. But the decision to hire you actually was debated in the council and with the mayor prior to that, because we'd never had a city administrator. I want to come back and talk about that whole idea of how we organize our city to run effectively. And that's one thing that the city administrator does. They have their, they're the kind of the main manager of the whole city. In a city where we have an elected mayor who may or may not have qualifications to administer a, how much revenue does the city deal with each year?
About $52 million is the budget this year.
It's basically, you know, it's a $52 million business or organization.
Correct.
And we are often hire mayors that don't have any kind of business background. So it's a big adjustment that the city is going to have to look at now with a mayor that's, you know, basically said that he's going to do away with a position. But I want to back up to your personal history. You came to us, you had worked in Spokane in a kind of a similar position, but not as city administrator.
Right. I was at, for a little over 2 years prior to coming here, I was with the city of Spokane. And there I was the director of grants and contracts, and then also became the interim director for community housing and human services. So all of their community development programs, all of their nonprofit support, and all of their homeless services was under my oversight, in addition to all of the grants and contracts across the entire city.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So you had a role that kind of was leading you up to this administrator position, like you took here, I'd say.
Right, because I'd been at Spokane County for almost 6 years prior to that. A little bit different being at a county than a city. But there I was in charge of grants and contracts and economic development programs with the Board of County Commissioners.
So you come into a town or city, Sandpoint, that's never had a city administrator. How did you put your arms around organizing the city to operate more efficiently?
Well, key to me, and I think this is important for anyone coming into a new role like this in the city, and I think this is an important rule for electeds as well. We have our Association of Idaho Cities, and they recommend come in for 6 months. For me, I made it 12 months without really making any changes, because you've got to know the culture you're coming into. You need to have a read on the organization. And even though you may have relevant experience from the past or from another organization, that doesn't necessarily translate into the organization that you're coming into. So for me, it was a year initially of just kind of assessing, meeting people, having an opportunity to talk with department heads and staff across the city. But most importantly, that is the year that we started working on kind of phase one of a strategic plan that was ultimately finalized in 2017. And the city had never had a strategic plan before. And it's important for a city to have one so that we have concurrence amongst the elected and the staff as to where we're going, what our priorities are, what we're expected to deliver on, over the next 5 years. It makes budgeting a whole lot easier. But there's been debate in the community, particularly in the last year, as to, you know, why maybe there hasn't been so much debate at the council meetings between the council members like there used to be in the past. And really, that's attributable to having a strategic plan. The hard work went into developing a strategic plan. And so long as the initiatives that are coming forward are in line with that plan, everybody is working together and it makes your city much more efficient. Expectations are clear for staff, and then council can deliver what they intended to deliver during their term, and the mayor as well.
Mm-hmm. Well, you undertook a lot of things. You have a lot of things you could count as accomplishments, I think. So when you came in, refresh my memory, that the bypass was just coming online?
That was on, actually, when I came on, we were just in process with the two-way conversion of the downtown streets.
Right. So the fact that the bypass had just opened up gave us the opportunity now for the city to take back control of some of the streets that had previously been controlled by the highway department.
Correct.
And so I'm sure a lot of our listeners remember that we had a one-way system set up downtown where we had one-way streets on Oak and Pine and Cedar.
Yeah.
And First.
First.
Yeah. And it's kind of funny because a lot of people at that time complained about the one-way streets.
Yes, they did.
And of course, after we the city made the decision to go back to two-way streets, we heard a lot of complaints about that. So, you know, sometimes you can't win. But what was the decision? Were you part of that decision to go to the two-way system?
No, actually, the decision was made prior to me coming on, and as well as, you know, bringing the angled parking back in. There were some nuances and fine-tuning on the plan, but generally, going back to the two-way streets as well as what the configuration was going to be was already predetermined.
Right. And there was already downtown revitalizations plans underway, like to redo First Avenue specifically, to be wider sidewalks with angled parking.
Yeah. Although ultimately the design of that and implementation was something that we did while I was at the city. That was a lot of outreach with the community, you probably remember, as well as specifically with business owners downtown. I would say those first years, 2016, 17, and 18, was an awful lot of work and actually rebuilding relationships with the businesses downtown. There was a lot of pushback at that time relative to the bid, which was still in effect in 2016.
The business improvement district
Improvement.
All the downtown core businesses were included in, yeah.
Yeah. There were a lot of complaints about parking and how well that was working and enforcement of parking. You'll remember we had parking contracted out. Diamond Parking was doing our parking enforcement. And we had different time rules and different rules for parking in the city parking lot. So the mayor was really involved in these efforts too, Mayor Rongstead, where we were out doing we did a number of workshops with downtown businesses in the community, really talking about the challenges on both of those fronts and came up ultimately with a new parking plan as well as restructured to eliminate an external contract for parking enforcement and created our community resource officer program, which was a combination of both parking enforcement, animal enforcement, kind of general code enforcement, as well as community relations and outreach. So that we could stay in touch with the businesses. We have people downtown on the streets who can check in with businesses, give them information about what's happening at the city or respond to questions. So that all happened during that time, as well as ultimately the design of the downtown revitalization, both phases one and phase two.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm sure folks will remember when Diamond Parking was in charge of enforcement, basically, the parking downtown, and there were a ton of complaints. And it seems like the complaints about that have waned, have kind of gone down.
I would say one of our great successes was implementing the Community Resource Officer Program. I think we were the first in the state to have kind of this hybrid model. And it's a hybrid model in terms of combining enforcement with community relations, because enforcement can be very black and white. And when you contract that out, that's exactly what it is. They're going to implement it in a very black and white fashion according to what the rules are. But especially in a small town like this, and the volume of tourism that we have in our downtown, there's much more of a balance that has to be achieved. And so how we're enforcing, what we're enforcing changes throughout the years or throughout the year, dependent on the season and kind of what we have happening downtown. So it's been much more effective. Mm-hmm. Also, the complaints about just generally parking, although, I mean, it's always a topic, but I remember my first 2 years, I literally could not go anywhere, anytime on my personal time or when I was downtown out of the office without people stopping me with complaints about parking. Mm-hmm. And I would say that really has changed since about 2017, 2018. Mm-hmm. And that's not the case anymore. Mm-hmm. There's other issues, but it's not parking. Mm-hmm. So I think that was a really successful effort that we undertook pretty early. Mm-hmm.
And the Engle parking gave us a bigger parking inventory. That's part of it.
It did give a bigger parking inventory. And mm-hmm. I think that will be one of the challenges yet for the community. Ultimately, I suspect it will be a conversation going into the future about the safety of it. Mm-hmm. And because you do get the blind spots backing up. And it's a challenge when we are the city trying. We are a city of walkers, bikers, as well as vehicle users and motorcycles, I should add, in addition to cars and trucks. And all of that's happening downtown at one time. So that visibility becomes a real challenge.
Mm-hmm. One of the things, just listening to you talk, is a big word is courtesy. If you're going slow enough and those cars are backing out, you know, and let them out, or a biker or a walker, just go slow, folks, downtown or anywhere where there's angle parking, because it is a visibility thing.
Well, and that was the intent with the design. So that's a really great point,
by Susie. By design, it was, you're trying to make people slow down because they have to. It's just, it's a narrower lane. And I think that was part of the idea of going to the configuration that's there. So we don't want people flying through the, believe me, First Avenue and Cedar Street used to be used for drag racing.
Yeah, the thoroughfare.
Really? So you have to break that that cultural habit.
Yeah, it's better for safety, and honestly, it's better for business when people are going slow.
Mm-hmm. Well, another big project was the Memorial Field rebuild.
Yes.
And you came on board when that had been approved, right?
Right, because it was approved in 2016 and or 2015.
Due to the success of the local option tax, it made the money available for that.
Yeah. Yep. One of the things we tackled early on with that in 2016 was the city, when I came on, really didn't have a plan for how we were going to educate business owners and work with business owners to implement. So there was the hurdle of getting it passed by voters. And then there was a first-time implementation of this new sales tax, the 1% sales tax, local option tax in the city. So that immediately, pretty much in January, and I'd say that was kind of one of my first major projects, was putting together the outreach to the businesses, the education to the community about the changes as a result, when they needed to submit, collect, and how that worked, what they collected on. So there was a huge education process that went on with that in early 2016. Mm-hmm. And then ultimately led to completion of the design of the grandstands and kind of the overall structure of the field, and the fencing and goalposts and things like that in 2016, with construction starting in 2017. and the turf decision became phase two. And it really became a turf issue.
Yeah, I know, it sure did. And it's still a little controversial, although I will say, I think probably everybody acknowledges that the field gets much more use now because it does have artificial turf and the kids the sport team can get on there much earlier in the year and play later in the year without tearing the field up.
Yeah.
On the downside, those of us that like grass, you know, we like grass, but how would you judge the success of going with turf? Artificial turf.
In my opinion, and it took me a while to get there because when I came here, and again, I was very familiar with the community when I came and had a pretty good understanding of the community. Spent a lot of time up here. I was one of those people who would have said, who did say, grass, there is no way. I remember talking to Kim Woodruff, and he had there was an initial study on turf options, and I was, how could you have one of these options as being artificial turf? But at the end of the day, when we did our Parks and Recreation Master Plan, and we hired Greenplay to help us with that effort, and they came in and made it really clear to council after studying all of this, there is no grass option that you can continue to have sports and the festival. That became the deciding point. And what it would have required with grass, again, because of the nature of our soils and keeping that natural turf, is a massive drainage system underneath, and a more of a sand field that would allow for drainage given our weather patterns here. And so in the summer, when festival came in, there was no option for not watering the full field during those 2 weeks that the festival is here. In fact, the grass, the only option would be that you're replacing almost all of the turf. Well, then we're not ready for fall sports for schools. So the two things just weren't compatible. Mm-hmm. And certainly more playtime, playability was also a factor as well. So
a lot goes into these decision-making
processes.
And a lot of people don't know the full scope. It sounds like part of your job was to get the information out as best as possible so that, you know, the final decision is clear as to why the city came to that.
We had our process, it actually started before I came in 2016 and continued with our user groups and festival in multiple meetings as well as community workshops about this. But still, when it came down to the decision, it's probably one of the meetings that most sticks out in my mind. We were packed to the hilt. We were packed out the door. And I would say it was pretty evenly, almost a 50-50 split in the room. And that always makes a difficult decision for council. They are trying to balance the keeping those who attended the meeting and are in the room and felt that was important enough, and then keeping the overall view of the community in mind and what's best for the overall community. But interestingly, I would remark on Memorial Field. It was Councilman Aiken, I remember distinctly, had said to me, came in my office one day and said, find us a way that this isn't a 51-49 kind of a situation, and what is another path forward. So we kind of went way out at that time and looked at another option, is if we did natural turf, which would not keep that was not the preference of the sporting community. Was there enough funding? Could we make some changes that would make our fields more playable over at Travers and Great Northern? So that was the first time we really were over at the other park doing a real assessment of our field surface and drainage and playability over at that other park as well.
At Travers.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, let's segue into Travers.
Okay.
So there's a... you mentioned that there was a master plan that was prepared for all the parks.
That was the Parks and Recreation Master Plan.
And the plan that was was developed for Travers maybe 5 years ago, 4 years ago?
It was in, so the Parks Master Plan was started, I believe, in 2018. Most of the efforts were over 2019. So there's been kind of rumors and perspective that, well, nobody knew about this because it all happened during COVID. And that actually is not the case. The Parks Plan was pre-COVID with a ton of community participation. You'll remember we had some community workshops down at the Hive that were very well attended. That was the first time we'd used that facility, again, trying to get the city out of City Hall and into the community. So that's out of that plan. We had concepts developed for City Beach, the downtown waterfront, taking a look at the field because we hadn't dealt with the field issues yet, as well as broader improvements down at Memorial Field and then over at the what we call the sports complex, which is Traverse Centennial and Great Northern Parks.
Mm-hmm. And in that plan, actually, it was probably more of a long-term vision that there would be an indoor facility at Traverse.
Yes. And I mean, when I came on, I mentioned that we did not have any strategic planning at the city. There was no formal strategic plan that had been adopted by the city previously. That was an effort we first undertook in 2016 and have continued to today. I was given a bullet point list of kind of council members and sort of their wish list of things they would like to see. And I think that's kind of how things worked historically. And with that, there was a discussion when I came on about an indoor rec facility and that the community had long wanted an indoor rec facility. And you'll recall in, I think it was about 2017, 2018, we were actually that pre-YMCA. Mm-hmm. We were working on some assessments on indoor rec facility mm-hmm. at that time. Mm-hmm. We got a grant from the Lohr Foundation and from Blue Cross Foundation, and we're doing some work on that.
Mm-hmm. And then the Russell family came along just a couple years ago with this offer to make this amazing $7.5 million gift that actually enabled the city to do something that was probably going to be many years down the road to have the financing to actually pursue a indoor facility.
Yeah, I don't know when the facility with the city without some type of outside assistance, mm-hmm. grant assistance, a donation like this, a something would have been able to accomplish an indoor mm-hmm. facility like this. It just simply there isn't that type of capital budget within the city that is free and available for something like this. And to be clear about the Russell family, they did not come in with an idea of an indoor tennis facility. We spent almost 2 years together in meetings, many meetings, going over what we had in our Parks and Rec master plan concepts and aligning what might be their interests with those concepts. We hadn't even talked about money. Mm-hmm. So when they first came into the office, I suspected they were looking at doing a donation that was larger than a donation of a bench, which we most commonly see. Mm-hmm. But nowhere in my wildest dreams did I think that they were coming in willing to make a contribution of $7.5 million mm-hmm. to this community. So
I think they saw a need. Of course, they have a great affection for the community, as James Russell did. They saw a need, and they decided to go big, right?
Yeah, well, the story was, as we were going through all of the components, and they went out to Traverse Park, visited the park multiple times. In fact, Kim Woodruff was working with me on this at the time. They came in. They would be in the summertime around 4th of July. They always spent their Thanksgivings here, so it was one Thanksgiving about 5 years ago. It was that year we had just horrible weather around Thanksgiving. It was below zero and miserable. And they were out at Traverse Park with Kim. And I just happened to be going out of town to spend the holidays with family. So Kim got that assignment. And talking about the components of the Parks and Rec Master Plan for that site. And where the alignment came is when James Russell was here in town, Jim told a story of James
sitting, the son. Yeah.
Yes, mm-hmm. James sitting at the table in the morning, kitchen table over coffee and kind of sketching out a facility for Sandpoint. His background was in engineering. Mm-hmm. So he said, Sandpoint needs an indoor facility. That's then when we talked about this idea for an indoor tennis court facility at the site and that being part of the master plan. That's where we got the alignment because they recalled back to James Russell penciling this out and you know, two visions aligning. Mm-hmm. And Kim had a funny story. Kim Woodruff, he told me several months ago, I think this summer, about James Russell. So when they were in town in the summer, he was an avid tennis player his entire life, played here at Traverse Park, most of his life, and wore all white playing tennis, white shoes, white socks, white shorts, and a white top playing tennis. He was our all-white player.
Jennifer, half hour goes by about five minutes, it seems like. We got to wrap up, but two questions. First of all, I want to know, give you a chance to say anything you want to folks out there. But first, what's next for you?
I have a couple options out there, and so I'm considering some different things and looking at just what may be next. And
anything that might keep you in Sandpoint.
Maybe part of the time, yeah. But right now it looks like most likely no. Mm-hmm. We're hoping to keep our house here. I mean, our intent coming, I took this position at the city because our intent was to live here, retire here, and be part of this community. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there just aren't a whole lot of opportunities in a small community mm-hmm. like this mm-hmm. that fit what I do and where I am in my career. Mm-hmm. City administrator at City of Sandpoint was perfect, mm-hmm. But most likely probably not here full time. Mm.
Okay, yeah. Well, what would you like to say to folks?
I just would like to thank this community for friendship, support, and really leaning in. I think that we have forgotten, especially post-COVID, actually how much work the city has done over the last 8 years to really engage the community and be more transparent, which is in line with the council's adopted strategic plan. Engage Sandpoint came out during these 8 years. Our financials all went online in the last 8 years, and we were one of the first cities in Idaho to do it. The state's now requiring it, but we had all of our financials online, our online checkbook in Sandpoint. Back in, I believe we did that in 2018. So we were way ahead of the curve. The community resource officers leaning in downtown, a lot of workshops in downtown. And, you know, COVID has created a lot of mm-hmm. strange things and has had a lot of really unfortunate impacts for this community with the amount of growth that we've experienced, the significant increase in housing costs and affordability for people to be able to stay here. And it's been a real challenge being at the city during that time. But I'm really proud of what we accomplished here. I mean, we were open when, as former Councillor Andy Grote said, we were open when all other governments were closed. We stayed open to the community. We leveraged dollars with Inovia Foundation and others to come in and help support the business. The council approved allocation of grant funds. We had dollars in first mm-hmm. for that whole effort to support businesses through the city. So we've accomplished a lot together, and I'm just proud to have been a part of it. I hope Sandpoint does not move away from a city administrator model. Having a professional breaking down silos, ensuring collaboration, strategic planning, and most importantly, continuity and a long-term vision so that you're not just, you know, our history with a mayor is 4 years and they're out, mm-hmm. 4 years and they're out, which mm-hmm. is like most cities. Mm-hmm. And so keeping that vision and where we are going for the betterment of the community, that's the role of your city administrator. Mm-hmm. And it's not to take the place of your mayor or your council, but it's really to support their efforts and make them successful mm-hmm. and create stability for your staff and the community mm-hmm. as a whole.
Yeah, there have only been a couple two-term mayors.
Yeah.
So we do see a continual churn there, it seems like.
Yeah, that's pretty typical. Mm-hmm. So, again, this creates continuity. And when you look across the state, I mean, most every city, especially all the cities our size, they all have a city administrator. You look down in Haley, you look at Caldwell, even Bonner's Ferry has a city administrator. It's just... It's the best way to go for a long-term vision for the community and continuity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, an administrator means to serve, which you have done for 8 years. So again, thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah.
It's been my pleasure.